Okay, well, while I wait for it to load, let me provide you with just a little bit of a backdrop for the study itself. I think that's important just because of the unique nature of the time frame that I conducted the study. I did participate in a go-live at a community hospital that opened brand new in 2005. And so when I was hired, I was actually hired to come on board and prepare all of our processes and get everything ready so that we could open completely paperless. And that was a pretty big deal at the time. There were only a few hospitals in the country that had ever done that, and we really meant it when we said paperless. There was going to be no paper. So I had the privilege of being able to onboard really almost every nurse and all of the ancillary staff, train all of them, and also participate in the physician training piece of it. And it was really it was quite an endeavor. It was a wonderful endeavor, probably one of the most fascinating times of my career so far. So during that time, I think the reason I really bring this up and feel it's important to let you know about it is that not only did we embrace the electronic health record, but we just felt like that electronic health record could do everything. You know, it was for us this new and exciting time when it would be capable of solving all the world's problems, so to speak. And I had already been a nurse for a number of years, so I had a bunch of problems in mind that I thought it could really resolve. So this study takes place in that backdrop, and I think, again, as we move through, you'll realize why I feel like that's important. So just out of curiosity, because we were talking before we got started, how many of you focus primarily on the technology side of things? I know there's a blend here, but is it we have mostly technology? Or okay, and then public health? Mostly public health? Okay, so it's a mix. And any nurses? A few nurses. Okay, all right, very good. We were just curious, and we didn't really see a breakdown anyplace. All right, so my vaccine research really runs the gamut. In this particular instance, in this study, I was looking at vaccine uptake related to technology and how could we really get at and improve, particularly the pneumococcal vaccine, with the use of technology. So just to tell you a little bit about pneumococcal vaccine and pneumococcal disease itself, this is really a big problem for adults. Vaccine uptake is still lagging well behind what it should be. The goals in 2010 and now Healthy People 2020 have been set, and we've fallen short of those in 2010. And you know, so hopefully we'll be on track for 2020, but we still have a little ways to go. When I speak of pneumococcal disease, talk mostly about pneumococcal pneumonia, and there's still about 40 cases per 100,000 people of pneumococcal pneumonia, and that does have a pretty high mortality rate. We often see that now as a bacterial problem emerging as a result of flu. So when someone has H1N1, a bacterial complication may often be pneumococcal illnesses. So it's really important that we get our adult population vaccinated, and that was really the impetus for this study. It is estimated that about one half of the pneumococcal-related deaths could be prevented if we were to just vaccinate that population that is at risk. I brought some cards with me, and at the end or sometime here soon, I can give them to you if you'd like. They have the vaccine indications. But just to briefly tell you who would need to be vaccinated, it would be that population that is 65 and older. They would get a one-time dose of the pneumococcal vaccine, and it's currently the 23-valent. All right, so that's the entire population of those over 65. And they actually do a pretty good job. The immunization rates for that are about 65 or so percent. But those 18 to 64 need to also be vaccinated if they have pre-existing conditions that might weaken their immune system. Also, those who smoke and are between the ages of 18, 64, and then, of course, 65 and on up. So there are a number of different disease processes, heart disease, diabetes, that would also make this person who is under 65 eligible to be vaccinated. And that's an important part that I think we're really kind of missing out on. As an acute care facility, we were among many who were struggling to really screen and vaccinate our patients appropriately. And so, again, I decided to take a look and see, since we were implementing and going live with this electronic health record, what would that mean for us for vaccine screening? Would we do a better job than a paper facility would? That was really the question. So back in 2002, just to give you a little bit of background on the vaccine, the federal government said, you know what, we're not going to have this just be in the hands of physicians. We are going to initiate these standing order types of protocols so that the nurses can screen and the nurses can vaccinate without a physician on board. Now, the physician could always stop that process and say, no, I don't want my patient vaccinated. But understand that all of the nurses at the acute care facility and health clinics do have the opportunity to screen their patients independent of a physician's order. So the purpose of this study was to investigate those aspects of the pneumococcal screening process to see, you know, again, what is going to happen in the electronic environment. Can we really drive this process, get our patients vaccinated, and do a better job than we would have had we been a paper facility? And then in addition to that, the nurse in me said, you know what, I don't know if that's going to be quite enough. So I designed an education intervention, and that intervention was not really on the side of the patient, but on the side of the nursing staff to let the nurses know this is what you need to be doing, this is who you should be vaccinating. And I kind of just saved that education module so I would do that intervention after we collected initial data. So in the first part of the study, we used a quasi-experimental design and we examined the relationship between the electronic healthcare process and the vaccine uptake. And when we did that, we took a measure to see in a paper facility and in an electronic facility, what was the vaccine uptake like? Now, I was lucky because the healthcare system that I speak of, the hospital that I worked for was an electronic hospital, but we have five hospitals in the system. And we had another hospital of similar size who had stayed paper. It was still on paper and had not converted yet to the electronic health record. So I had a built-in comparison. Hospital was pretty similar as far as the patient population and the nurses, things like that. So I compared Hospital A to Hospital B to take a look and see what was vaccine screening process like. On this slide, you see the paper facility and the electronic health facility. It's a little bit small, actually, for you to read. But we just kind of really thought going into this, I guess I hypothesized that it was going to be a shoe-in that the electronic healthcare facility would blow the paper facility out of the water. I thought that for a number of reasons, primarily because in the screening process at a paper facility, the nurse has to go get the screening paper and then take it in the room and then find out if the patient is eligible. If they are eligible, they have to write the order, get the order co-signed, fax the order to the pharmacy, have it come back. So it was this long, drawn-out process, a process nurses are very familiar with, but still rather cumbersome. And at the EMR facility, all that they really had to do was go through this mandatory screening field, click the check boxes as the patient answered the questions. And those check boxes would send, and most of you are familiar with probably the way an electronic health record works, would send an auto-generated order to pharmacy. It's filled automatically. It appears magically on the medication record. And it also sends reminders to the nurse. So I just thought, this is a shoe-in, right? It just was kind of set them up, knock them down. What really turned out to be the case was that it didn't work that way. And so before we even started to collect data, the people on the technology side created a log for me, and I don't really pretend to know how they created it. But this custom-created log was able to collect information for us for not only that period of time, but also for the future. So you can see here, we could see who was eligible, who was screened, not only who was screened, but who was screened appropriately, because there's a difference, and which patients might have refused. So that CCL still exists today, and we can take a look back whenever we decide we'd like to. But the results were these. That pre-intervention data collection revealed really that the paper facility and the electronic facility were about the same. So we weren't doing a better job in the electronic health world at doing the screening. Now, you know, we hypothesized all sorts of reasons why that might be the case, but the bottom line was the screening was mandatory. The nurses couldn't bypass this field if they wanted to. They had to fill out this mandatory field, and even despite that, there was still not doing such a hot job with it. So this breaks down the paper facility to show you how many were screened and how many could have been. And it was 41 people were screened out of 45. I'll flip to the next one. And here at the EHR, 41 out of 45 were screened. So those numbers were important. But also, taking a look at those who were eligible, we really weren't quite capturing those who were eligible. So we weren't asking the right questions of our patients. And I think that was something that really kind of also took us by surprise. So armed with the knowledge that we had an issue both on paper and in the electronic health world, we went forward then with an education intervention and moved into that next process of the study. Now for this intervention, what I did was I developed a tool that went online. It was an electronic system mode of delivery, so the nurses all took this education module. And we had really good participation. It took them all about 45 minutes to do the module. And we ended up with about 200 and some nurses doing the intervention. Upon completion, I didn't want to measure right away. I felt like that would be a pretty big limitation. So we waited a few months. And at about month 3 or 4, we went ahead and recollected data to see what had that education intervention really done for our vaccine screening and uptake. The results this time were a little bit different, and that was that what we saw was that pneumococcal vaccine uptake was actually improved significantly. And not only was the vaccine uptake improved, but we did a better job at identifying those patients, and we had less refusals. So as the nurses began to talk to the patients and really say, hey, this is why you should get this, this is why you're eligible, really opened up some dialogue, it made a very, very big difference for them, and many of the patients were much more inclined then to take the vaccine. So that was the second part of the study, and here you can see the results now compared post-intervention. So before we screened and before we did anything, we had problems across the board, and then afterwards, every single one of those patients was screened. And not only that, but again, we ended up with a much larger immunization rate, 75% more were immunized at the end of the day. So this just breaks it down again by graph, and so depending on how you like to look at things. Now, there are some limitations certainly to the study. It was a relatively small sample size. It was in one area of the country in one health system, so certainly that does limit our findings. We can't really generalize them, and we didn't control for age, so we screened not only that over 65 group, but also the 18 to 64. We didn't really break those out into different age categories. And some staff opted not to participate, so we didn't have 100% participation in that education intervention as well. The conclusions, though, really, I think, are kind of a cautionary tale. And this is the reason that I want to bring you back to my opening when I told you, we opened up the hospital saying that the EHR can do everything. And I still believe 100% that the EHR has influenced our patient outcomes in a huge way. But I think there's a little cautionary tale in here because we really needed to make sure that not only did we go live with an electronic health record, but that as we move through these processes and put into place mandatory screening pieces and things like that, we really need that education to always be right there and dovetail both the education along with the technology piece of it so that you can really get optimal results. So the implications for practice, what we really found out, and we talked with the nurses afterwards, and we said, why weren't you screening your patients? And what did you do when you got to that mandatory field? And they said, we checked the boxes that we knew were the case. We'd ask a few questions, but we didn't really delve into it. And so they just kind of were given a little cursory glance, and they were doing what they had to do to get the screen to go away. Moral of the story, how do I make this disappear? And they said, once they were armed with the knowledge and they really felt like they had some talking points, that then they used that screen as a reminder to themselves to really drive home the message to the patient that they should be vaccinated. So it made a big difference. The use of mandatory fields could serve as a reminder, which is really just what I've said. Not as something that is going to fix all of your problems, but as something that when combined with education really should do a great job in improving patient outcomes. And that is it. And I understand we're going to entertain questions afterwards?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Again, as far as collaboration goes, certainly anything.